Welcome back to Chainsaw Matinee. Everybody take your seats. We have such sights to show you. I'm Kai.
I'm Marty.
And I'm Hannah. And today I am going to say something I didn't think I was going to say when we started this movie watch. I enjoyed the disturbing incest movie. Yahoo!
I did too! Woo! It was great! I mean, the whole thing was about how it's bad, so, yeah. Pretty good. Pretty good movie.
This, every time I think I have a thumb on how I feel about this director, I see another one of his movies, and I do, like, a 180 of, like, ah, damn, you got me back in. Oh, yeah. And then I'm out again. It's like the hokey goddamn pokey.
Oh, I feel like I understand. I'm, like... If I'm only doing half of the hokey pokey and it's just all of the in parts. Because I love just about everything I've seen of Yorgos Lanthimos. It's like so dry and it's presented like seriously, but also like with this like ironic sense of humor that it just tickles my brain in a good way and not in the weird incesty way that he presents in this movie.
I kind of feel like... At the beginning, like, I wasn't super into The Lobster, so that kind of put me off of him. But then, like, the more of his stuff I watched, the more I kind of started to vibe with it. I was like, oh, okay, I kind of get this. And, like, I don't know, it just, like, took me a while. It's kind of, like, similar, and these are totally different, you know, people and artists, but the way I felt about Kafka when... Like, my freshman year of college, we had to read The Trial, and I absolutely hated it. And then my senior year of college, I took a whole class about Kafka, and, like, I absolutely loved it.
Mm-hmm.
And so I guess, like, sometimes art hits different just at different points in life.
Yeah.
And I think what I have gone through between, like, the first time I saw a Yorgos Lanthimos film and now... has just completely, like, shifted my perspective, and now I'm like, okay, I can kind of get on your level with this. Yeah,
I mean, the first time I ever watched a Yorgos Lanthimos movie, it was when we went to go see Killing of a Sacred Deer when it came out in theaters.
Oh, yeah.
And, here's my story about Killing of a Sacred Deer before we get into the rest of, of Dogtooth. I thought Killing of a Sacred Deer was so funny. There's like one particular scene in which Barry Keoghan is like sitting at a table eating spaghetti and he's like talking about his dad and he's like somebody told him that he eats spaghetti like his dad. He's like, you know, they like stick it in the pasta and turn it round and around and around and then you eat it. And then he goes, and then I realized everyone eats spaghetti that way. And I shot coke out of my nose. I was laughing so hard. And the guy behind me got, like, really mad and was, like, grunting and shushing me. And I was like, I can't help it. This is hilarious.
It's funny. Like,
it's this, his stuff, then, he has a very good grasp of dry humor.
Yes. And then the scene at the very end where Colin Farrell he's got a blindfold on and he's like running around in a
spoiler.
Circle with a shotgun and I'm talking about Killing of a Sacred Deer. It's a spoiler, but like this movie came out a while ago.
It kind of flew under the radar for a lot of people, and I think you should go in blind.
That's true.
But I'm chuffed that he can help it.
I do actually still want to talk about that one day on the podcast.
Okay, well, maybe we'll cut that part out. But anyways, the ending was also funny. I thought the ending of that movie was hilarious, even though, like, it's presented seriously. I thought it was really funny just because of the elements of it that were just... It was just, like, these, like, little small things where, like, yes, it's terrifying, but at the same time, if you just, like, analyze it a little bit, it's, like, the funniest thing you've ever seen in your life.
Well, and for me, I appreciate this director because he has a very clear vision and style, and he is, like, mm-hmm. I'm so glad we get to kind of tiptoe into the realm of, like, disturbing movies, because, like, I would say this one is mm-hmm. very much not your traditional horror movie. It's just so unsettling and disturbing and, like, harrowing, and I think that there's some subject matter in here that is very, very difficult and scary, but I don't think it's done just to shock mm-hmm. you. I think the shock is leading to a point that is very strong and thoughtful. Yes. And I appreciate that about this film. I think the subjects that Yargos delves into, I think I can take it or leave it, especially because there's this interesting theme throughout his work about a very kind of burgeoning idea of sexuality and what that is. And I think for me, with mm-hmm. certain of his projects, it's very alienating to me. And with mm-hmm. this one, I found it much more interesting from a, like, a perspective of theme and sensation and the way it's shot. And, like, I was, mm-hmm. even though it's fucking disturbing and it's scary, I was so interested in what the film was saying with those sex scenes.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought it yes. was interesting.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah. Well, my thing is, like, in a lot of Yorgos Lanthimos's work, the sexuality is also tied to agency. And so, like, that's kind of the sex is more serving as, like, a bigger part of, like, the theme of, like, you know, being your own person, I think.
Yeah.
And I feel like that's definitely apparent in Dogtooth.
I think something I appreciate about, sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off. Please finish your thought.
Oh, you're good. I'm done.
For me, about this one that I didn't feel as much in Poor Things is you get more of an idea of how the characters feel about the sex they're having and how it yes. changes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And that's part of what makes it disturbing as well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
This movie is, like, more than Poor Things, extremely clinical. Like, it's, like, everything that's done, it's very strange, but, like, everything is done with, like, this, like, analysis behind it. And, like, everything is very, like, purposeful. And, like, you can see, like, the wheels turning behind it, I feel like. And so, like, you can tell, like, where all of these things are leading up to within, like, the theme of the movie and where it goes at the end.
Yeah. Real fast, before we keep talking, I do want to just cut in with, like, a trigger warning, because I think it has been apparent from our discussion so far that this movie covers a lot of very serious topics.
Yes.
Including child abuse, incest, animal death, consensual and non-consensual sexual situations. Mm-hmm. So if, you know, any of that's not your cup of tea, then this episode probably isn't for you. So just,
a lot of parental abuse as well.
This mm-hmm. is gonna be probably a lot more serious than some of our previous episodes.
This is more of a, I wouldn't call it psychological horror, but it is, like, very psychologically, like, down in your brain. Yeah. We usually cover, and, like, horror movies.
Horrifying.
And just, it's horrifying, but in a different way than most other horror movies are.
It creeps under your skin and feels present in a way that, mm-hmm. like, you know, I don't feel like Friday the 13th in, I don't know why I did this in Leprechaun, too. I keep bringing up Friday the 13th as the example that's just, like, fantasy.
Well, horror. Jason lives in your brain rent-free, it's fine.
I think that if you went up to a random person on the street and were like, hey, name a horror movie, it would be very likely that they would say Friday the 13th.
Or Halloween.
Yeah.
Yeah, but this is very not that. The horror is deeply human.
Yes. It's, it's one of those where, like, it's, like, a very familiar situation that's also presented as, like, alien and unfamiliar and, like, the way that they speak and move and, like, all of the things that they do in this movie are so, like, there, it's almost as if like he wrote it purposefully to sound like as if an alien wrote it, just to be like, hey, this is a very strange behavior.
Yeah.
And just like really put the cherry on top of like, oh, hey, this is not normal for children to be abused in this way.
Right.
I think one thing that's common in a lot of his movies is because sometimes the world these characters live in is so outlandish or grandiose, kind of like in The Favorite or in The Lobster. A lot of these characters say mm-hmm. exactly what they think at all times, whereas this one shocked me.
Yeah.
Because I feel like a lot is left unsaid or up to mm-hmm. interpretation based on their actions and yeah. and their treatment of one another. And that just really unsettled me and made me very fascinated with this movie. Even though it is a lot slower, I would say, than his other movies, mm-hmm. there's a lot of lingering. There's a lot of, like, building of tension and just sitting in these very uncomfortable moments.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
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 So do we want to get into the plot of this movie?
Let's do it.
Let's dig our dark
incest! Into okay.
it. So, I'm sorry, I shouldn't be laughing that loudly at you screaming incest. There is incest, though. Yeah, non-consensual incest forced upon these children by their father.
We are about to enter into the Folgers commercial.
We are about to enter the Folgers commercial. I say it like Rod Serling, the Twilight Zone.
Except I think the Folgers commercial, like, this movie makes the Folgers commercial look like when normal. Harry Met Sally, like, peak romance.
Yeah.
So this movie follows a family. Side note, this is one of the films that Yorgos Lanthimos made when he was living in Greece. Mm-hmm. So it is in Greek, which I haven't watched that many Greek films, so I thought this
it's
was
so
cool.
fascinating yeah. that he still has that dry sense of deadpan delivery, even in, mm-hmm. like, no matter what language it's in, it still has that very Yorgos direction yeah. and delivery. So that's kind of cool to see.
Yeah.
So
quite like that.
Follows this family. We have a mom and a dad, and they have three children. I don't think we ever learn their names. Like, I don't even know if they have names, because they're only
no, they're just the eldest, the boy, and the youngest, because there's two girls and a boy.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. And they're all, I get the impression that they're all adults, or at least, like, very late teens. Mm-hmm.
From everything I've seen describing the plot, that is the case.
Yeah.
Okay. But they have lived their entire life in this house and been extremely sheltered. So, like, in the very opening of the movie, we see them wake up to start their day, and they're listening to these cassette tapes where their mom gives them definitions of words, but it's, like, not the correct definition, mm-hmm. Which is a theme throughout the movie, and, like, clearly something that their parents do just to, like, shelter them from the outside world. Mm-hmm. Like, at one point, the boy hears someone, like, mention a zombie, and he doesn't mm-hmm. know what that means, and he asks his mom what it is, and she's like, oh, it's a type of flower.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, we see that come up a few times. So already,
she also
it's,
says,
like, really,
pussy is, like, a light. Right?
Yeah, the yeah. big overhead light.
It's a very bright light, yeah.
Yeah, and so already it, like, sets a very unsettling mood. And then mm-hmm. We're introduced to these three siblings by one of the daughters suggesting that they should play a game where they turn the tap water as hot as it can go and then all stick their fingers under it and, like, see who can stand their finger being burned the longest.
Mm-hmm.
You
know, normal things that, you know, late teens, early 20s people
oh,
do.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Yeah. And this is something, ongoing theme with the movie that I am kind of in love with, this idea of sensation, of touch,
yes.
of, like, exploring the world. Like, you kind of think of it in childhood when you do these things to kind of test out the world around you, but then this movie takes it to an a disturbing degree, like, of this mm-hmm. harm, or harming each other, or harming these, so it mixes in these very interesting things of just, like, you know, picking mm-hmm. blades of grass with, like, putting your hand under a faucet.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway,
this, like,
I just
idea
love that
of
idea.
of like harm almost being like something that frees them because they don't really have any sort of emotion.
Yeah.
Throughout the whole movie. The only times that they ever like feel anything is just like, yeah, it's just like when they're beating the shit out of each other in that one scene, or like doing, you know, weird experiments on each other with like, oh, you have appendicitis or whatever that one girl did.
At one point, like, the two sisters chloroform themselves to see who wakes up first.
Yeah.
And it's like, okay.
This kind of like idea of like almost a self-harm as like a gateway into fun.
Yeah.
Very Hellraiser. A mundane Hellraiser.
Well, and it feels like, again, a childish thing you do taken to an extreme degree because there's no one there to kind of stop you. Like, they're almost encouraged. Like, there's that thing where they have to, like, go underwater and hold their breath as long as possible. And, like, I remember doing that as a kid. And then they're encouraged, like, hey, whoever holds their breath the longest will win. Or I remember there was one thing where, like, they're running across the lawn to get these airplanes, because when airplanes fly overhead, the parents throw toys so that the kids think that the airplanes are just toys, because they look around the same size since they're so far away, and just they're fighting each other to get to the airplane, and they're rewarded for it. They're like, ah, yes, good job, you got the plane, you get a sticker as a reward. So it's just interesting that this childlike impulse to kind of, you know, test your limits as far as you will go, and where that can lead when you're not stopped. At least I think that's part of what's going on here.
Yeah. So our setup, extremely sheltered family.
The dad even tells them, like, the outside world is so dangerous, and the only way it's safe to venture out is if you have a car. And he also tells them, because they ask at one point, like, when will we be able to leave? And he said, you'll leave when your dog tooth falls out, which is like your canine tooth, and then when it grows back, you'll be allowed to drive the car. But the thing is, like, these are adults and their teeth are not supposed to be falling out, let alone growing back. So, like, clearly it's just a lie, but the kids don't know that. It's very sad.
Yeah.
And then their parents give them stickers when they do things that make their parents happy, which is mostly just displaying obedience in some way.
It sounds like elementary school.
Yeah, and whoever has the most stickers at any given time is pretty much, like, treated the best. So they get to decide the entertainment,
which is usually just a bunch of their home movies, because that's all they are allowed to watch. There is, like, no outside media.
Yeah. They also, at one point, the dad tells them that their grandfather is Frank Sinatra.
Oh my god, the moment where he's, like, translating the Fly Me to the Moon lyrics as, like, I love my children, I love my house, I will never leave my house. And meanwhile, Frankie's in the background, Fly me to the moon.
Yeah, that was good.
Let me sing while white people have sex.
He also tells them that they have another brother who left the house and lives on the other side of this big giant fence that they have in the backyard. So, like, sometimes the kids go out and, like, talk to their quote-unquote brother and, like, throw him food and stuff.
It's never confirmed if that's true, but I don't think it is.
No, I think, because I remember there's a bit where they find a cat. And this is another trigger warning. If you cannot handle animal death, specifically, spoiler, cat animal death, it's pretty sad. There's a moment where a cat wanders into the yard, and these children, adult children, or these people are terrified of it. So the boy goes and gets some garden shears and kills the cat. And then the parents decide to turn that into a story of, like, the cat killed their brother on the other side of the fence. And then you see a scene where the father, like, smears red paint over himself and, like, cuts his shirt to, like, sell this lie to their children of, like, yeah, this cat will, like, fuck you up and eat your face and eat your body. And that's what happened to your brother. And to scare off the cat, we have to get on all fours and bark like a dog. And that's one of the really disturbing sequences when you just see these people on their hands and knees just barking at each other to practice.
Yeah.
And it's very unsettling.
That's another like ongoing theme in this movie, because we do get a scene of like the dad going to this dog trainer because he had recently gotten a dog to be a guard dog for his family, and he's having someone like train it before he brings it home. And he's like watching the trainer just like beat up on a dog, and he's like, I don't know if your training is really that good. And the trainer's like, no, you don't understand, it's part of the process. Like, you have to break the dog's will before, you know, you can form a bond. And like, he asks the dad, do you want a friend or do you want an obedient animal that will obey its master? And like, it's very clear that like, oh,
that's the theme of the movie.
Yeah, this is how he views his family.
Yeah.
So,
and
yeah,
then the dog, he's like trying to get the dog to like come to him at one point, and the dog's just like sitting there while he's like yelling. He's like, Rex! 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 And the dog is just, like, sitting there, like, next to its like, doghouse, and he's just, like, staring up at him, like, I'm not moving, well, fuck and, you.
God bless that dog. And even to solidify that further, later in the film, before they bring the dog back, they tell their children that the mom is going to give birth to two children and a dog. And I was so curious about, like, wait, what, where do the children come from? Because she don't look pregnant.
So at one point she does say that she's pregnant again. She's like talking with the dad. And I think she says that it's a girl and a boy.
It was them trying to make up the story. They were like, oh, let's tell our kids that you're pregnant. And then she uses it as a threat against them. Mm-hmm. She's like, whoever behaves the worst will have to give up their room for your new siblings. But if you're all very good, then maybe we'll reconsider having more babies. So, like, clearly she's not actually pregnant. They're just trying to come up with more ways to manipulate their children.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then we get to the truly disturbing, probably the most outwardly disturbing thing
We also have this woman who works with the dad.
Yep, that's...
I was about to say, that sounds like what Hannah was getting to.
Okay, okay, cool.
No, if you want to explain it, please, go for it. I'm not eager.
Well, there's this woman who works as a security guard at this place that the dad works at, and he hires her basically to have sex with his son, and he blindfolds her and takes her to their house. Like, she's not allowed to know where they live. And like, she, you know, fucks the son, and they like, it's the only time that they ever have outsiders come to the house, so all the kids are like fascinated with her.
Yeah, it's so messed up too, the way he treats his son. Like, the son is the one who constantly gets praised and like gets the most stickers, and is clearly favored by the dad. And then, like, also the way the dad is just like, oh, well, he's a boy and he has needs, so let me pay this woman to come have sex with him. It's like, what?
Yeah.
Like, it's so
and, like,
gross.
He feels really, like, the son acts really awkward about it, too. Like, obviously he doesn't know what he's doing, first off, because he's in a sheltered household and, like, has no experience with other people.
Well, then the dad keeps, like, asking the girl, like, oh, did you wear perfume for him?
Yeah, like,
make sure you fix your hair. And, like, you have
it's a weird
dad
way of, like,
in.
It's a weird way of, like, lusting after her by way of, like, giving her to his son. It's very strange. There's it's a whole commentary, I feel like, about the objectification of women and simultaneously, like, the performative duties of a man, and, like, how both sides of this, like, are equally fucked up, you know?
Well, and this is also another common theme of this guy's movies, of sexual experience without intimacy, and I find that to be an interesting common theme, because that's the thing, like Marty said, these sex scenes are very clinical. Like, you do see the thing go down, but it is very, like,
it's awkward, and, like, it's almost just, like, watching, like, pistons go in an engine.
Yeah, they both look like they are not having fun, and as a matter of fact, the girl, Christina, does, like, feel frustrated, because she's like, hey, like, you're not helping me get off. Like, you know, you just thrust a few times and then you're done. And so she tries to get him to eat her out, and he won't do it.
He's like, I don't feel comfortable doing this. And she's like,
and I think that, okay, doesn't whatever. He comment saying, like, isn't this for me? Or, like, something like that?
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So she decides instead to go to the eldest daughter, and she's like, hey, if you, lick me, then I'll give you my sparkly headband.
Mm-hmm.
And the daughter's like, okay, sure. And so she, like, eats her out, basically. But, like, the eldest daughter doesn't really quite know. I don't think she really quite knows the sexual concept. It's more of just, like,
oh, I think she knows, you know, a transaction took place. And she wants, she wants to know why she wanted that particular thing from her in exchange for the headband. Because then she goes to her little sister and is like, hey, I'll give you the sparkly headband if you lick me. And then the sister's like, okay, where do you want me to lick you? And then she points to her shoulder. And this is where I kind of am so fascinated with this movie's idea of that kind of touch and texture. Because it's like she's like exploring this new world, which is again introduced in this horrible, abusive way, but then we get to see how it changes her viewpoint and how she responds to it, and it it is neither positive nor negative, it is just a curiosity, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I do think it's so interesting. And then we also, so later on, you know, she keeps up this type of dynamic with Christina, and
she's, like, trying to give her hair gel and, like, all this other stuff.
Yeah, and she's like, I don't want any of that. I want these videotapes that I saw in your bag. And
I feel like now is a good time to say, I fucking loved the eldest daughter. I was so interested in her character.
Well, like, as the movie goes on, she ends up being the protagonist. Like, you know, it reaches a certain point in, like, the film where we end up starting, like, to see things from, like, her point of view. We get more of, like, her, you know, watching these movies and, like, kind of forming a sense of identity that she didn't have before.
Yeah.
She even takes the name Bruce as her own name.
Because it's the name
of the shark from Jaws, which I love. She's like, my name is Bruce.
And she even practices with her sister. She's like, okay, you say Bruce, and then I'll look.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so cute. Like, it's such a sweet moment. And later, when she's in the pool with her siblings, she's, like, trying to reenact the movie, and she just straight up, like, bites her brother because she's pretending to be a shark.
Well, that's the other interesting thing too. As she gains more autonomy, she becomes a bit more violent. Like, she slashes her brother's arm, and I think it might also be just the fact that she's the eldest, so she's the one branching out. And it's so interesting that they're doing all this stuff for the son when she's the one who's, like, exploring more and doing these different things. And when she watches the tapes, I think it's heavily implied to be Rocky IV and Jaws, and she's the one who bothers with this person from the outside world, because she starts to understand, like, hey, I know what
there's something else
doing
out there
my parents don't want to be happening, so you give me this or I will tell them. And so you start to see her kind of operate outside of her parents' control, which again makes her a very interesting character.
I love Bruce. She's my favorite.
Well, I know
there's something very very gender affirming about finding a name that you really resonate with, that isn't yours to begin with. I chose the name Marty because I watched Back to the Future, and it was a great movie, and I really I loved that movie so much, and, like, it resonated with me so much that I was like, I'm Marty now. So, yeah, totally. That was a thing that happened with me. So, like, this movie immediately was like, oh, this is kind of personal now.
Yeah, you know. And it's, I think it becomes a stronger idea, too, when the movie goes on and the parents do find out about the tapes and that the outside woman gave them, Christine, I think is her name, gave them mm-hmm. to her. Yes. And the father, like, finds Christine. And I'm surprised he didn't kill her. He just, like, hits her with the
VCR. No, he beat the and, like, shit says, out of her, though.
He beats the shit out of her, and he's like, I curse you to have children with bad influences. Which I am ashamed to say kind of made me giggle a little. I was like, oh my god.
Yeah.
It was a very funny line.
Yeah. And it's a frustrating scene because, like, I do think Christine is doing something wrong, but it sucks that mm-hmm. she got punished not for doing a thing that was wrong, but for, like, just giving her a videotape that ended up kind of helping her develop.
Yeah, the thing that wasn't a problem was that she was soliciting this man's child for sexual favors. Mm-hmm. What was wrong is that he is so wanting to control his children that, like, any influence is bad, and so just, like, watching unauthorized tapes was the thing that did it for him. Not the fact that, like, his children were, you know, basically being put in a form of danger.
Yeah. And then, well, he also beats Bruce with one of the VHS.
Yeah, he duct tapes one of the VHSs to his tape and just, like, starts smacking her upside the head with it really hard. And, like, I don't know if they, like, actually, like, did the beating, but it sounded really, like, real.
Yeah.
I'm
sure they didn't actually.
Yeah, I know, but, like, the ADR was so good that it sounded like it was, like, an actual, like, hit. And it was like, really visceral and just, like, it sounded like plastic against skull.
I think, like, this moment really shed more light, for me, on the way that the siblings treat each other, too, because, like, one of the things I noticed on this time watching the movie was, like, the youngest daughter is basically the family doctor, and she's always, mm-hmm. like, patching people up and giving medical advice. And then the more I thought about it, the more I was like, yeah, every time we see one of those kids, they're, like, always injured in some way. Mm-hmm. And it's implied that, like, it's basically either they spend all their time hurting themselves because they want some form of entertainment, or beating up on each other.
The dad beating the shit out of them.
Yeah.
Or the mom slapping them.
Which are probably, like, all related. Because, you know, when you have parents who use physical violence against you, then that, you know, kind of teaches you that, like, oh, I can just solve all of my problems with violence.
Mm-hmm.
And, like,
yeah,
I think that just sheds so much light on this whole situation.
Mm-hmm. And then they also have the youngest daughter performing the duties of doctor. Yeah. And I feel like there's also, like, some significance of the youngest being, like, the family doctor, because, like, I, like, just from experience of having 5 kids in the family, the younger you are, the more you end up having to take on the problems of everyone else. But at the same time, that also happens with the oldest. Me and my sister were basically, like, the ones that basically took care of everyone else, just because, like, by virtue of me being the almost youngest and my sister being the oldest, it was just, like, you know, we took on all of the emotional problems of everyone else. And so, like, there's, like, something there, I feel like.
Yeah.
It's, like, all that pressure of, like, oh, I have to be like them, or, like, I have to take care of them. It's kind of from both sides. Yeah. Some fucked up shit. Family dynamics.
It gets more.
And the boy doesn't have to do shit.
Yeah, well, it gets worse, because now that Christine mm-hmm. is out of the picture, they're like, well, we gotta find a new way for him to get out his urges, which is interesting, too, because I feel like that's a projection from the parents, because he doesn't seem like a horrible...
No, he's... No, he's just like there, and they're just like they're like pressuring him into like having sex.
Yeah, I really
he doesn't even like seem like he's interested in it. It's just like something that he's being forced to do. It's like,
I think he just wants to make his dad happy, and yeah, he knows his dad expects him to have sex.
Yeah, and like that's a commentary on manhood. It's like you have to be like this like manly man who wants sex all the time, and like, you know, goes and is a strong man who has sexual urges and shit, and he's just like, he's there and he's like, I'm gonna put my penis in you now, I guess.
Yeah. So the and parents then, have him they
go for it, Kai.
They have him choose.
Yeah.
They have him choose which of his sisters he prefers to sleep with.
Yeah, so they run a bath and they put the boy in the bath, and then the two girls strip naked and then get in the bath with them, and he's like fondling their asses and like their breasts, and like it's very awkward. It's like he doesn't want to be doing this, and neither do they, and they're just like, I guess this is happening now. And so like they're just, I'm sure, they don't show the parents in that scene, but I'm sure they're, like, watching from the sidelines, it feels like.
It totally feels that way. Yeah. Like, it's, the whole situation is just so, so deeply disturbing. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So he does end up picking the elder sister, I guess. Mm-hmm. And they do have sex. And then they're just lying next to each other, and it ends with her quoting one of the movies where basically she says, if you ever do that again, I'll fucking kill you.
Yeah, she's quoting Rocky IV there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah,
it's such a good scene, though, because, like, it's so well acted that you can just tell how, especially the daughter, how she's feeling without her have to, you know, explicitly say it.
Yeah,
like she can, like, reference it through this art.
The only way that she can express like the feelings that she has is through like this thing that she can reference, because like in her day-to-day life she's not really given any form of like expression, and so Rocky IV ends up being the thing that gives her like kind of a voice. Rocky IV and Jaws.
And I love that it's art, like specifically film, but just art in general, that like really makes her start questioning, you know, her parents and like wanting more from her life. And I just think that's,
and realizing what she likes and what she doesn't, because what,
and who she who she is.
She's
a shark.
And it is sweet, like that Bruce scene where her sister is kind of affirming, like the children aren't, even though they're kind of violent and weird to each other, they're not malicious. Like, they don't seem to hate each other. They've just been so sheltered that they don't really know anything else.
They are put into like these states of like intense like pressure by the parents to be obedient and never speak out and never, you know, do anything to upset anybody, and that's at the detriment of their personalities, and
they're forced to compete with each other.
And so, you know, like I don't think they hate each other either. I think they don't really know what to do with each other besides be.
I mean, I think they're forced to view each other as competition. So it's like kind of awkward. Like, you relate to each other because you're all suffering the same thing together, but then at the same time, you keep constantly being pitted against each other.
So you end up like having these moments where like,
go ahead.
Please. You know, sibling fights, you know, that's gonna happen, but like these are like incredibly intense sibling fights because of that pressure.
Well, and there's that one like game they play where they're all blindfolded and they have to find the mother, because
to hug her
is their love, and they have to earn it. Which is really fucked up. Very, and also, like,
It's like strange, but at the same time, it's like kind of also like so obvious what like the themes of this movie are, that it's like, oh, you're hitting us over the head in with like the strangest rubber baseball bat imaginable. It's a curly Q like rubber baseball bat that Yorgos Lanthimos is just like whacking you over the head with.
Well, it's such an interesting idea because when you think about it, parents are your world. They shape who you are mm-hmm. and decide most of your life in that adolescence. So what happens when if they never lose that control? And that's just, yeah. that is an interesting premise because I think growing up is so traumatic in and of itself. And I think a lot of us sometimes, I do anyway, long for the simplicity of childhood. But then you see something like this mm-hmm. and you realize without those struggles and without that freedom of individuality and personal expression and that ability to go out into the outside world and experience the external factors that influence you, it's mm-hmm. it's incredibly easy to become something very controlled and malleable. I don't know exactly what you become, mm-hmm. but I assume cults.
It's like it's less being a person and more being a domesticated animal, which is hence a dog tooth.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I think that there are a lot of parents who do treat their children that way.
Yeah.
I mean, I kept, you know, watching this, I kept thinking about Shiny Happy People, which is this documentary that came out last year about the Duggar family.
Mm-hmm.
And having known and grown up with a lot of people who were raised in that kind of subculture, like, the abuse that goes on there is just insane. Like, they do this thing called blanket training, where they, because their goal is, and they will tell you this, is to train their children to be obedient, because that's the whole, like, biblical thing of, like, obey your mother and father. And so they will take an infant and set them on a blanket and put all these toys just on the outside of the blanket. And every time the baby reaches for one of the toys, they'll either hit them or flick them on the nose. Just basically to train your baby to be afraid of you and instill obedience as young as possible, which is so messed up. Mm-hmm. And then I think, you know, as we saw with the Duggar family, sexual abuse of minors is a big running theme and a big problem in that community, because mm-hmm. when you teach your children to blindly obey any authority figure and, you know, unquestioningly do what is asked of you, then that makes them vulnerable to sexual predators.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just really unfortunate. Like, you need to be able to teach your children how to think for themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Because, like, once these parents in this situation are gone, they're utterly helpless.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, like, what would happen if, like, both the parents died and then, like, these kids are, like, left to their own devices? They would probably kill and eat each other. That's my guess. Yep.
Yeah, it's just sad. And I do think there is a bit of, like, you know, this is a small scale version of what fascism does to people, too.
Yeah.
I do think this is like a little bit of like a microcosm kind of study of that, of just this whole idea of, you know, you have to blindly obey authority because, you know, just because.
That kind of small scale domestic fascism. That's yeah, interesting.
And just how dangerous that is for people. Mm-hmm. And how just the smallest thing, the smallest encounter with art and expression can completely, like, topple authoritarianism. Mm-hmm. And
it's like the moment you're authority. Introduced to an idea that's different than what you've been trained to, like, listen to all your life, it makes you think, like, what else am I missing out on?
Yeah, Kai got me the sticker that let me read it. Joy is a form of resistance. And I feel like it's situations like these where you see how true that honestly is, because in systems of control yeah. there is no room for expression and joy and fun. And there's one scene, I love a good dance sequence, and I gotta admit, Yorgos fucking yes. nails it every time with a dance sequence, when they're having an anniversary dinner, I think, for the parents.
It's an anniversary party, yeah.
Yeah, and the boy is playing the guitar very well, I might add. And the yes. two daughters are doing this very strange, like, almost Irish step dance at first, but, like, you can tell it's very rudimentary dancing that their parents must have taught them, so it's not very good. And the youngest daughter taps out pretty early. She's like, I don't really feel like dancing anymore. Can I stop? And they're like, yeah, sure. Because, like, the parents never seem to care when the kids stop doing things. It's usually when they do things for themselves rather than the parents that they start to get angry, which is when the eldest daughter keeps dancing, and the dancing just gets very, like, she starts just, like, standing in place and, like, shaking and just, like, doing all these, like, rolls and, like, kicks and stuff, and you can just tell she's very much exploring. She starts, like,
pointing at him.
Yeah, she's very much exploring her body, and, yeah, it is, and it's just, like, they teach us this in acting class. It's just exploring what your body can do and how you feel doing those things, because so often in our daily lives we have to behave a certain way, so we don't really ever get the full extent of what it feels like to do certain things in our body. So to me, I feel like that's mm-hmm. what that scene was about, was her, like, exploring her form of expression and her form of feeling, and that's why the parents seem to react so negatively to it, because they, like, tell her, sit down, stop.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's and like, it's we just, didn't teach she, you to do that, them. Therefore you shouldn't be doing it at all.
And no one praises her, no one claps or anything like that. She just sits down and starts eating.
Yeah. Yeah.
They should have clapped. I would have clapped.
Everyone I should have clapped.
I would have had a full-on musical theater moment of like, yeah! Yeah! Slay queen!
Feel the rhythm. Groove is in the heart. That's what D-Light told mm-hmm. me.
So yeah. Then we come to the end of the film. Where the oldest daughter in the middle of the night gets up and she goes to the bathroom, she grabs a, like, one of those hand weights
mm-hmm.
and knocks her tooth out.
And her dog tooth.
Yes. Yeah.
And then she, gets in the trunk of her dad's car because she's going to sneak out of the house. And, we don't know what happens to her from there. The last shot of the film is his car in the parking lot at his job. And, you're kind of left to make your own assumption about mm-hmm. what happens.
They notice she's missing. And, yeah, like, he runs outside and he's got a flashlight. But then, like, the mom and the younger sister and the brother are, like, on all fours barking like dog, like guard dogs. And, you know, they can't find her, so they kind of, I feel like they just kind of assume that she ran away, but, like, they, you know, they don't know where she is.
Do we want to go each go what we kind of thought about the ending?
Yeah, you yeah. should go first. You should go first.
I think for me, it's interesting because I think whether or not she suffocated or she eventually does get out, the important thing is she did get out and she found a way around her parents' rules. And I think whether or not that leads her to ultimate freedom or right back to the house, they cannot take this moment away from her of, like, in this way she beat the system, even if just for a moment. Mm-hmm. And I think that is important. But also, I saw someone else's reading that I can't stop thinking about, where someone says, even if she made it to the outside world, she is still in these constraints. Like, she's literally basically stuck in the trunk of a car. So, like, mm-hmm. even if she escaped her family's, like, specific rules, there are still rules out here in the real world that try to trap us and constrain us. They're just different than the ones she was raised with. So it's a little bit of both. Like, she did find freedom, but she also found herself in a different kind of cage.
Yeah, not to compare this to a comedy, but like, that kind of reading reminds me of Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt, and, like, how the premise of that show is basically, like, she was locked up for years, and then now she's just trying to adjust to being in the real world again, and that's something that's incredibly hard for people who are, you know, victims of, you know, being shut in and not being able to be let out of the house.
Mm-hmm.
Or in extreme cases, like, being stuck in a basement or something like that, you know?
Yeah.
But I want to read, like, no matter what happens in my mind, I feel like I want to read this as hopeful that she did get out. And even though it's a struggle for her, it's something that she's able to overcome and be able to, like, live with. But, like, I'm also just, I am kind of nihilist, but at the same time, I'm kind of a hopeful person. So, you know, I like to think the best of things. And I hope that that's what happened.
I see it as a very absurdist lens where, like, you know, we are always going to have these struggles and always going to have certain systems that want to keep us down. But that still doesn't take away from the fact that she broke their rules and she broke their system and proved it to be flawed. And I still think there is power and value in that, even if ultimately it might not lead to the destination we want. But also we don't get to see that, and that's kind of the world too. Like, we can do these things and we may never see the outcome, but that doesn't mean that it wasn't worth doing.
Yeah, there's a I'm remembering, I just like read it like a little bit ago, but there's an Ursula K. Le Guin quote, and it's like she's like quoting, the ends justify the means, and she's like, but what if there is no end? Then all we have is the means. And so, like, that's kind of what I'm thinking about with this movie. And like, all of the actions are like more important than like the outcome, even though I hope that the outcome is good.
Kai, what about you? What do you think?
Wow, well, I think both of you kind of said everything that I was thinking. I mean, you know, I like to be optimistic and hope that everything ended up being okay. Maybe she went on to make her own movies. And that would be really cool too.
Maybe she works as a movie reviewer.
Actually, that kind of made me think, if anyone wants like a happier version of a similar story, the movie Brigsby Bear is like,
I haven't watched that one, but I've heard that it's really good.
I really loved it. It's like about this boy who was I think he was like abducted, but he was raised like in isolation by these two people, like his parents basically, and they created this show for him called Brigsby Bear, and it was just like his dad in a costume, and they even made up like a fan forum for it, and like they just kept leaving comments and posting on it and like got him super invested in this show. And then when he does like get out of that situation and enter the real world, and he realizes like nobody knows what this show is, he decides that he's going to make it. And so he, like, gets a bunch of friends together, and, like, they end up making this movie based on, like, this character that he really loved. And so,
that's
anyway.
That's really interesting.
Recommendation if people want to check out something that has vaguely similar themes.
Well, and that description also made me think of the movie Room, that I think is different,
but
has certain similarities in terms of this child is raised only knowing this one certain way of life.
Yeah.
And rather than having a parent who's trying to keep them sheltered, they're trying to get them out.
Yeah. There's, I mean, like, all of these are very similar in that they have themes of, like, control over children, and just kind of, like, control over a person in general. Yeah, I feel like a lot of these would be, like, good, if not strange, double features.
Yeah.
Oh, God. Well, and I feel like, to me, the thing that keeps this movie from, like, spiraling into, like, oh, God, existential, we're never getting out of this cesspool, for me, is the eldest sister's enthusiasm for, like, this media she finds, and her, like, strength to, even though it's fucked up that she feels she has to do it, to, like, be so determined to get out that she knocks her own tooth out. And she's, like, there's something very, I don't know, inspiring of her looking at herself in the face after she does it and just smiling, realizing, like, I did it. And then she can just go off and do it's the thing that she wants to do.
It's that pure satisfaction of direct action. It's like not mm-hmm. waiting for someone to save you. It's doing it yourself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, like, even though in the grand scheme of thing, yes, it's fucked up, but if you get in her mind mm-hmm. and the situation she's in, she's a badass.
Yeah, she is a badass. I fucking love her. Like, I love Bruce. Mm-hmm. She's a shark, and she's Rocky IV.
She is Rocky. Oh my god, the scene where she, like, puts juice in her mouth and pretends to be, like, Rocky when he's
Yeah, fighting. she starts punching her own face, and, like, all the like, it was, like, cranberry or pomegranate juice or something. She's just, like, spitting it everywhere, and she's, like, pretending so it's funny. Blood. It's so, mm-hmm. it's, like, so good, but also at the same time, like, it, like, that childhood imitation. It was like I used to do shit like that when I was a kid. Yeah. Like, mm-hmm. yeah.
It's like seeing your kids, like, making a blanket into a cape because they watched Superman, or a kid, like, climbing on that big webbed thing in the playground because they want to be Spider-Man. It's imitation is also how we learn.
It's imagination. Mm-hmm. And creativity, and putting yourself in the shoes of something else in order to feel something.
Yeah, so I like that art is what starts to inspire her and change her. And I think that, I don't know, I don't know about you guys, when I heard this, I had heard some people say, like, I'm never gonna watch this again, that was so disturbing. And, like, don't get me wrong, it is, the situation these people find themselves in is horrifying, but, like, I would watch this again. Like, I think this film is very purposeful in what it's saying and what it's shooting, and I think that even though it is very disturbing, it is I don't know, effective with that disturbance. It's not just trying to Eli Roth, hey, we got you. It's like, I don't know, it's very emotional, and it's coming to a very, I don't know, cathartic realization, I think, anyway, that is both very sad, but also very liberating at the same time.
Every single part of this movie is deliberate. It's very well crafted. The message is incredibly clear. I don't understand why people will just, like, watch. I feel like people don't like to sit with their uncomfortable feelings anymore. I feel like a lot of people are like, I'm never gonna watch that again. It's just because they feel uncomfortable with the source material, and they're not looking past how they're feeling to see, like, what is actually going on within the narrative.
I think there's some truth to that. I can say, as someone, this was my second viewing of the film. I think I was the only one of us who had seen it beforehand. Mm-hmm.
I mean, I immediately loved it. Like,
yeah, and on second viewing, like, it definitely holds up.
Yeah.
Like, I noticed a few things that, like, I hadn't thought about the first time. So, yeah, I can definitely echo that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there's so many things, like, we didn't even talk about. Like, the camera work alone, like, they vary. The moments when they choose to show faces and the moments when they choose not to show faces is incredibly deliberate. Or, like, the body language they use around each other, or, I don't know, mm-hmm. there's just so many little details in this movie.
We didn't even touch on the dad putting fish in the pool.
Oh, that was so weird.
I just remembered that, and I was like, why did he do that? I don't even remember why he did that.
I think they just don't want their children to know that the ocean exists, because at the beginning of the movie, they, like, say that the sea is something different. I don't even remember what they say it is.
Yeah.
The couch.
Yeah, that's all I can...
Yeah.
Or maybe
the couch, like, is the sea. I think it's to throw them off, like, to make the world as confusing and changing as possible so that they have to depend on their parents when things are outside of their knowledge or understanding.
They're like, oh yeah, the youngest girl walks in and she's like, there's like fish in the pool, but she calls them something else, but I don't remember what the word is. She's like,
you need to come catch them. So I guess it's also, like, just really trying to hype himself up to his kids, like, if they think, because the truth is, he bought these fish at a store, obviously, because he has them in, like, this bag when he comes in.
Mm-hmm.
But he's trying to make his children believe that, like, oh, he caught them himself, mm-hmm. and, like, you know, aren't I so good at providing for you?
Yeah,
and it's such a contrast to what we see him do as his job, which is essentially make very, I don't know, surface level decisions of like, yeah, we should use this tile in the bathroom.
Yeah.
As opposed to controlling someone's life and outlook on the world. Yeah.
We haven't really touched on the mother, as I was, like, saying, but, like, she's, like, so, like, interesting in, like, she's, like, kind of their teacher and very emotionally manipulative with them. And
it's interesting because, like, you get the impression that she's not entirely happy. Like, she's, to some extent, I think, also a victim of the dad.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, she's hands and knees barking like a dog, too.
Yeah. Yeah,
but she still chooses to manipulate and abuse her children. Mm-hmm. So, like, she's still
benefiting from this.
Yeah, exercising what authority she does have.
Even though it's still hurting her.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like conservative women when they're like, yeah, we have to be these homemakers. We have a responsibility to bring up the children and do these things. And
make sure they're perfect.
Realizing that is... Yeah, not only are you hurting others, you're hurting yourself.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah. And I remember them saying there was something that made me think, like, was this what caused this whole situation where something happened to her in the outside world? And so maybe that was what... I don't know. I think if I look too deeply into why they're shut off from the world, I think I'll find myself in a tailspin, because I think it's just about power.
Mm-hmm.
It ultimately, whatever caused this is irrelevant now, because now they just want control.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think that can be true of a lot of...
Like, there's always, like, that idea of the cycle of violence, so these things may have also happened to her as a child. There might be, like, a whole community of people, like, having to do this. But that's not really important because we're focusing mainly on just like what is happening within this house.
Well, and even if things are always going to happen too, where like, you know, maybe your child gets hurt or you get hurt out in the world. So there is this impulse to kind of shut everything out and shut everything away.
Mm-hmm.
But if you do that, you never get to grow or express that feeling. It's kind of like, you know, you have to experience, I think.
Mm-hmm. It's like that security versus freedom question that they always ask you in high school or whatever. At least they asked me this question. It's like, would you rather have security or freedom? And it's like, maybe don't ask a 16-year-old that because they don't know.
Listen, I'm going to watch 1, 2, 3 movies, whether my browser is secure or not, so.
Yeah.
Plus, apparently, you get to know all of these single MILFs in your area, so win-win, I say.
Yes.
Girl, help the bots.
There's no malware on my computer. Anyway, I really enjoyed this movie. There's a dancing baby on
my computer now. I got my computer pregnant by clicking on these beautiful MILFs.
But yeah, for me, I think this one and The Favorite, I absolutely love by this director. And Killing of a Sacred Deer is just something else entirely for me.
Yeah, I loved Killing of a Sacred Deer. I feel like I probably should watch it again because it's been a while and all I remember is feeling like it was the funniest thing in the world and I don't really remember much about the theming or anything. So that's probably, I feel like at some point I'm going to have to sit down and watch all of these movies because I really like Yorgos Lanthimos as a filmmaker. I feel like it just speaks to me in a way that a lot of other films don't, as much as I love films. It's like there's something like he like pokes at like something that is very personal to me and I'm not sure specifically what it is, besides that kind of feeling of growing into your own person, at least with the ones that I've seen, you know, that kind of like internal struggle of who am I, what am I doing, am I letting other people control my life, how am I going to combat that, and the result. I loved the beginning and the end and the overall result.
And the overall result. Yeah. How about you, Kai? How you feel?
I really, really liked this movie. I think it
was the right amount of disturbing.
It's definitely, it's a challenging movie. I understand why it's on so many most disturbing lists. Like, don't get me wrong, if you're not willing to kind of like stare at the wall for an hour and go, what the fuck? What the fuck? For a while, maybe watch something else. Like, honestly, I do think Poor Things, as much as I'm not as big a fan of that one as I am this. Poor Things is, like,
very similar to this movie in theming.
I think it does give more voice to certain themes. Like, it helps talk you through the ideas it is presenting, so it maybe feels a little safer. That combined with the steampunk and the Emma Stone of it all and Mark Ruffalo being silly. So if you want something that's, like, touching on these themes but a little safer, in my opinion, I still think it traipses into some disturbing territory. Maybe start with Poor Things, and then if you're ready for something a little bit more raw, then you can come over to here. Because I do think it is a valuable viewing experience that I enjoyed and I would like to return to someday, because as Kai kind of mentioned, when you watch it more than once, you notice more of the details.
Maybe you can, like, start with Poor Things and then work your way backwards into the Yorgos Lanthimos discography. I don't know, like, filmography. Discography. He's not a musician.
And on the other side of it, if you like, if you watch Poor Things and were like me and you were like, this isn't disturbing enough, watch this one.
Yeah.
Oh, definitely. Yeah.
This one is, like, definitely, it has much darker themes and, like, ways of showing, like, sense of identity and, like, how that is stripped from people, and how they can regain it. Poor Things is much more of a fairy tale. Meanwhile, this is like a psychological deep dive into fascism that will chill you to your bone if you're not ready for it.
Yeah, I would say Poor Things is, if I could compare them to drinks, is like some nice blue energy drink, and you're like, oh, interesting, tasty, got some good ideas here. And then this is like if you drank that, but also did some heroin.
I was gonna say, like, in terms of, like, drinks, I think Poor Things is like maybe a nice wine. It's a little more alcoholic than normal wines, but it's nice and it goes well with dinner. Meanwhile, this is a bathtub of absinthe.
That's a much better analogy. That's a much better analogy.
I just drank a bathtub full of absinthe.
Bring up. I guess there's not much more I can add other than I just really like this movie and I'm really glad we got to talk about it on the podcast.
Hooray.
I think we should also talk about Killing of a Sacred Deer one day, which is probably his other movie that most falls into, like, something tangentially related to horror.
Yeah.
I
do want to watch The Lobster. I don't know if we should do it for the podcast, but I do want to watch it just because. I
consider that
Patreon
thriller. It's just, maybe.
Perhaps.
Yeah.
I just kind of want to, like, go through his filmography because, like, you know, I've only seen a couple of them, but I've loved everything so far that Yorgos Lanthimos has done. So I'm willing to, like, just, like, Scrooge McDuck myself into like a big pile of DVDs.
Yes.
Yeah.
So once again, thank you guys so much for coming together to talk about this movie. And thank you, as always, to our listeners for tuning in. And we'll be back with more episodes. Maybe next episode will probably be maybe something a little more silly.
Hopefully it won't have incest.
Yeah.
I love that we went from the leprechaun to this.
To this.
I know. That's just kind of how life is sometimes.
That's life.
That's how life is.
So if you want to keep up with us, you can follow us on social media. We're Chainsaw Matinee everywhere. And we also have a Patreon if you want to throw money our way. It helps us keep the show online. Thanks again. I really do highly recommend this movie if you feel like you can handle it. And
we'll, and I guess this movie recommends you watch Rocky IV, too, I guess.
Yeah.
Watch Rocky IV and watch Jaws. And also, it's okay to disappoint your parents. That's okay.
Hey, good indeed. And,